You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Hey, welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 351. Today is Sunday, September 18th, and my name is Kurt. I am joined by both Ham and Steve. Tonight's show, we will discuss Josh Colemanter's nice first start for the Braves, Jose Fernandez and the Braves fighting again, and the bizarre injury list growing for the team. But first, this week, John Coppolella took to Twitter and did an Ask Coppy session. And as has been the case for so many of these, he was very direct and frank and full of interesting answers. So, guys, let's take a look at some of the more enlightening responses that Coppolella gave to some of these questions and see what we think about them. So one of the more interesting ones was somebody asked him if they thought that there was any chance that the Braves would pursue some of the bigger name guys who have been traded away the past few years. And his answer was yes. Without naming names, because of tampering, would absolutely see us try to bring guys back in the future. So any thoughts on who he might be talking about, Ham?
I mean, this was a bit of a head scratcher for me, and you guys may say someone who I go duh for. I mean, the first one, Andrelton, I think that was the trade that hurt us the worst most recently. But I don't see a place for Andrelton on this team anymore. You know, assuming Albies is heals well, so that's so it's not him. Kimbrel, maybe, but no thanks. I mean, I don't think we're ready to really take advantage of Kimbrel at this point. Hayward, I can't see that happening. Shelby Miller, I don't know. So I, you know, it's interesting that he's open to it, but I, you know, I don't want one of the Upton brothers. I don't want Ibar. I guess I don't need to say that. McCann.
No, he's totally talking about Ibar. But okay, I mean, okay. If you don't want to do that,
yeah. I mean, we have Matt Kemp, so I don't know why we need Justin back.
And I just
see bringing Melvin back. I just can't see it being a good thing. So I don't know. I mean, great, but I don't know who that player is.
Yeah, you know, Kurt, I went through the list too, right? I agree. It's not Hayward. Money, years, he's off the list. Not BJ. Justin signed through 2021. I mean, Gattis, maybe. But he has a $5 million option for 2017. You got to figure Houston pays that for 27 home runs again. I would assume so. The best guy I could come up with was Jason Grilley, you know, who has a sub-1 whip in Toronto this year. He's a free agent next year. Maybe it's Grilley, but it's certainly that's not what he seemed to be implying with his answer. But he's the only guy I could come up with.
Chris Johnson.
God. I have the name.
Oh, do you? Excellent. Okay.
Martin Prado.
Yet again.
Right. Except the qualifying offer that they're going to give him. I still get back to that.
Yeah. That's the only honest to God. I went through them all too. I mean, Alex Wood, it seems like all these guys are either wrapped up. They're bad.
Oliveira.
They don't have positions that they can play for the Braves or needs that they would fill for the Braves. So Kelly Johnson, maybe. I mean, but is he a big name player?
No. I mean, or Frenchie. Isn't that sort of a foregone conclusion anyway?
Right? Yeah, they'll probably try to sign Frenchie. But no, I'm with you, Kurt. I mean, Prado, I agree, makes sense as well. I don't know if there's any other pitchers. I mean, Shelby Miller, maybe, if they think he could change of scene, come here and regain something. Although I just from a face-saving perspective, can Arizona really do that?
No.
Could they really? No, they just couldn't.
Yes.
And do over.
Gave you everything for back.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I was going through the list and thinking about BJ and just laughing at the thought of it, you know, but I looked at BJ's numbers. And BJ's numbers, remember, we were talking about how BJ had turned his career around. It was quite good. In San Diego this year, his slash was .256, .304, .439. Since he's gone to Toronto, .203. 264, 338. He's slugging 100 points less, and he's almost at the Mendoza line. I mean, to me, it's like any pressure of any kind whatsoever, and he can't perform anymore.
Yeah.
Well, and it is an interesting look if people, we don't have to cover it right now, but I mean, look at the seasons that the Braves have pulled together from Nick Markakis and Matt Kemp. I mean, I know that they're not the youngest guys, but productively, price-wise, you compare that to what people are paying Jason Hayward and Justin Upton right now and the production that they're getting out of those two guys. And obviously, we were never going to be able to sign those guys anyway, and I don't think anybody really felt like we should. But it's amazing that the production is so much higher out of our old, fat outfielders compared to those young studs who are who are getting paid like $400 million combined.
I mean, Markakis's numbers are like dramatically better than Hayward's offensively, and I think the camps are pretty comparable to Justin. It's really it is bizarre, no doubt about it.
So moving on, Copy also said that auditioning in the big league time is over. The prospects will need to really earn it in 2017. So, guys, is it time for that approach? And maybe should that approach, would we be taking that approach if we weren't moving into our new stadium? And potentially, are they putting too much on these young pitchers to produce immediately? Steve, what do you think?
Well, you know, the rebuild, the tear down and the rebuild of the farm system and all that stuff has happened so quickly. I mean, so much more quickly than we've seen in baseball, really, that I'm glad they're taking a step back and slowing down. Now, would they have slowed down as much like this if it weren't for the new stadium? Probably not, right? I think they really, really, really want to be a 500 team at least next year. And they are afforded that opportunity because they're going to have all this extra payroll. They can go out and sign pitchers and sign a catcher and, you know, maybe sign a third baseman, even though they're saying they're not going to. So I think it's all wrapped up in the new stadium, without a doubt. But I think that it's good. I mean, you know, they probably wouldn't have pushed Aaron Blair so much if it was next year. I don't want them to push Sean Newcomb. If Albies doesn't seem ready after spring training, let's not push him. Like, I think it's only good. You know, we're going to talk about the playoffs in a while, but I mean, you look at the amazing pitching in single A right now, but that's, you know, it's a ways off. We can't rush these guys. I don't know, Ham.
Yeah, I don't know. It struck an interesting chord with me, that comment, because I don't. It feels like tough talk without anything to back it up. Like there aren't any really great free agent pitchers out there for next season. I mean, Rich Hill, like, is a 37-year-old. But if you look at the people who are most likely to be available after qualifying offers, which we're obviously not going to try to match, or, you know, we don't want to give up draft picks for, or just, you know, or options getting picked up. There's not a lot of pitching out there. So I just don't understand what Copy means. Like I don't know what he means. Like, or else what, right? So if Folty's out there, or Whistler, or Weber, or Gant is out there struggling, and Williams Perez is getting injured, and we're not there yet, what are the other alternatives? Cole Minter? Like, just bringing in veterans who are, you know, below replacement value pitchers? So I appreciate that. It's like he's speaking, Copy is speaking to trying to sort of shift the tone to get better next season, but I don't understand how he can enforce that. It feels like we're still in a place where that's his only option, is people who are not quite ready yet trying to figure it out at the major league level.
I think it means he's signing a bunch of veteran inning eaters for the last two at a minimum, or three spots in the rotation. I think that's what he's saying.
Even if 500 is a good ceiling for those pitchers, because there's not talent out there. There's nobody out there that I would sign. Maybe trade for. Maybe I don't know, Buchholz is available.
Well, and maybe that's what he's talking about.
Trade.
You know, there's a lot to trade. There's a lot from which we can trade.
Yeah. I don't know, Curtis, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I'm with you guys. And I mean, it seems like, which I will sort of get to this a little too later, but I might as well make the point now. I mean, it seems like, and Domino and I talked about this, that you're sort of past the point where you're bringing in Aaron Blairs and Shashins and guys like that. I mean, if you're really talking about that you're going to the next level as a team and as an organization, Ham, you're right. I mean, there's really nothing out there. I mean, it's like Jake Peavy and CeCe Sabathia and James Shields, the guys that you would have to overpay and who are just bad, who are on the wrong end of their career. I guess there's Ivan Nova, who might be interesting. But like even Buchholz, he's still got a club option. So, you know, Gio Gonzalez
Gio's still got a club option. Going to be a Brave next year.
He's not. I wouldn't be surprised. Scott Kazmir. I mean, there's a couple of guys that are out there. But I mean, some of these guys are just Latos, who's really struggled. Do you really want to have one of these guys come in and,
And
eat
plus,
a bunch of money? And
plus I mean, to get them, you know, if you were to win them, you're going to have to offer them 3 years. Right? Maybe, what, 2 years? Maybe at a minimum at $20 million a year. But we don't need it. I mean, we're so close.
Guys are 2 years away, though, Ham.
No, I know. But I just feel like to get a pitcher like that, they're going to want more years. Like I don't think
we need that. I mean, any of these bigger names, and again, these aren't great names, but there's no way a starting pitcher who's 31 years old is going to take a 2-year contract.
Right. And we don't want anything beyond that. So it just works against us even more. I mean, maybe you trade. You know, and this is a whole other conversation about what do we do with our four outfielders now, Kemp, Enciarte, Markakis, and Mallix. But you trade one of them to Toronto for Liriano, you know? You use one of those assets and maybe some, and try to get someone who's got a couple years left on a deal. But then I feel like that's a wasted move. I feel like, why do that? We're not ready yet. And I don't think we need to be bringing in high-caliber pitching next year. I say let the guys who are the face of the future continue to figure it out.
Yeah, but really beyond Blair and Whistler and Folty, I mean, I guess maybe Lucas Sims is ready to try again. But, I mean, all the – you know, Sean Newcomb's the closest, but he really needs to start in AAA next year. He just started figuring it out in AA, you know, the last third of the season. He'll need to start in the big leagues next year. So I don't know. There's really not a bunch of bodies waiting other than guys that we would be rushing. And look at what we did to Aaron Blair. I mean, Aaron Blair, every guy, every prospects person we talked to and everyone we read about said Aaron Blair was the most major league ready guy we had. And they put him out there and he just got so scorched that he kind of, you know, he stopped pitching well in AAA after we sent him back down.
But
so,
that's protecting. I mean, if Coppy's saying we're not going to put people out there who aren't ready yet to protect them and slow them down, that's one thing. But if he's saying you got to earn it. I just – that's what I don't understand, right? He's sort of –
but is it
– I think he's saying it also
But does it also mean that it's going to be guys like Rob Whalen and Chris Ellis and people like that that aren't necessarily the top prospects in our farm system, but guys that have pushed their way through and pitched well and put them in a position where they're going to be competing with these jobs just like the bigger name guys are? I mean, do you think it's something like that?
Well, maybe. I think the Copy does not want to see – it's been some absurd number of different
16.
Starting pitchers this year.
Colemanter was 16, which is a major league record for starters, different starters over the course of a season.
And I know some of that's been injury, but it ain't all been injury. And I don't think they want that again next year. I mean, the offense has figured it out, and we still can't win a lot of games because the pitching's been so bad.
Yeah.
Well, let's move to the offense there. Coppy also said the offseason focus would be on a catcher, which we, of course, already knew, and at least two starting pitchers. I guess we're not just talking about the offense. So, Ham, I guess we're looking at Whistler. Is he officially on the outside looking in? Blair, Jenkins, these guys. Who is your top three, I guess, remaining at this point going into next year? And what do you see ahead on? I mean, I guess we sort of just talked about this. Any idea? I mean, really, I swear it's Gio. I mean, I really believe that that's the guy that they end up bringing in. But
I think, that,
you know,
I think
what do you think?
Resign him. I think he stays in that. I don't know. I think so. Let's say we bring in two pitchers, and the list is not great. But so now we're looking for, you know, it's Folty, Tehran, two outsiders who are not on the team right now, and vying for a fifth spot. I still think that's Whistler's spot to lose, even to Jenkins at this point. That's how I feel about it. I mean, Whistler looked great today, you know, so I think he still has it in him. And having said that, I don't think we're going to sign. I just hope we don't sign a rent-a-veteran pitcher to eat up innings and push Whistler out next season, because I think he's on the cusp. So I don't think he is on the outside looking in at all.
He's taken a step back, though, Ham. And, you know, game to game, I knew that. But I hadn't really looked at his numbers in a while. And he's been bad. I mean, it's true. He didn't walk anyone today. He only gave up two earned. But heading into today, he had an ERA of 5, a FIP of 4.8. And over his last 15 starts, his ERA is 6.35. and his slash line's 292, 350, 494. Like, he's taken a step back this year. And I, even at the All-Star break, I would have told you Tehran, Folty, and Whistler, that's a done deal for next year. They got to figure out the back end of the rotation. I don't think he's guaranteed a spot. I really don't.
So do you still think he's in the driver's seat, though, or do you think someone's
I do think they will give him every opportunity to look good in spring training and take that spot. But yeah. I don't think it's a guarantee. And I think that they want to put Tyrell back in the bullpen. I just get the sense that we're not going to see Tyrell start next year.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on catcher? Major League MLB Trade Rumors is reporting that the Orioles are discussing with Scott Boras an extension for Wieters. So, yeah, you know, that is not a deep group that's coming up as well. Is
Luke Roy, catchers. But he's got an option. I'm sure they'll pick up his option.
And I mean, you got to figure that the Nationals are not going to let Wilson Ramos go.
I mean, why would you?
Yeah.
I mean, their payroll is getting pretty bloated, but
he's 29.
I'm just looking over this list of
Alex Avila. I mean, AJ Ellis, Nick Hundley, Chris Iannetta, Luke Roy, Dianer Navarro. This guy, A.J. Pierzyniski,
Carlos Gerard Seltzel,
Giovanni Soto. But he's 34.
What about Kurt Suzuki? He sort of had a bounce back season.
He's got an option.
Solid.
There's an option on him. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just not a lot there either. So it looks they might end up overpaying.
Yeah.
And the front office has been so public about we're going to get a catcher. They need to figure something out.
Maybe it's a trade
that we have no idea. Maybe they are. Yeah, but don't the Astros just extend him? I don't mean extend him, but pick up that option.
Yeah, they do. They do.
I mean, they do.
Do you want Gattis as your everyday catcher?
No.
No, I don't. Although he would throw out more than two guys, as Tyler Flowers has done all year.
Well,
no, seriously, I'm not exaggerating. It's like 2 of 52 or something I saw this week.
He definitely connected with two this week.
Well, maybe those were the two. Curtis.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So, guys, up next, we'll take a look at some headlines, but first, a quick break. So, guys, let's take a look at some of these headlines from the week. So, on Wednesday, the Braves acquired right-handed pitchers Josh Colminter from the Cubs and Joe Wieland from the Mariners for cash. Both were signed, obviously, to allay some of this depth that we've been talking about. The Braves are sort of running out of starters to get them through the end of the season. So Colminter actually pitched well. He got immediately thrown into action and pitched against the Nationals, went 5 innings, 2 earned, matched a career high of 8 Ks. So he is under team control for one more year. And after his nice start on Saturday, Steve, do you actually give him a serious look in spring training next year?
Well, there's nothing to lose in it, right? And if you look back in 13 and 2014, he had ERAs in the mid-threes, high threes in 2015. 16 with Arizona this year was his, you know, was pretty rough. His FIP was over 5.5, but, you know, to what Coppy said, looking for at least two starting pitchers, if he's halfway decent, yeah, give him a look. I don't know, Ham?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't see it really working out for him, but he's here. I'm sure he'll get a shot. And if he's looking great in spring training in whatever role, you know, middle relief or, you know, they use 8 pitchers a game, see what he can do. There's nothing to lose, but, I'm not putting a lot of hope into him or into Wieland, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't either. The one thing I do love is that delivery he has, where it's like one of those lumberjacks throwing a tomahawk at a target. It's pretty awesome. But beyond that, I feel like this, what I talked about before, I the Braves have to move beyond this gambling on the washed up veteran pitchers, hoping that they strike gold with one of these. And I mean, obviously at some point, and perhaps this point, they want these guys to sort of actually stick around and produce and not be in the, we hope they hit until the trade deadline and we get some return out of them. I mean, obviously if they're out of it, they are, but I just feel like all the talk and all the talk about the payroll for next year that they're going to be spending money. I mean, you sort of – I can't believe you're going to go into a new stadium and
Josh Coleman yeah. as your fifth starter.
Yeah. There.
I mean, it was nice. It was nice, though. The real reason behind it was that they were trying to give Gwinnett the best arms that they could in the postseason, right? So they didn't. They knew there was stress there. So that was at least a contributing factor to this decision. So I'm okay with that. It's cash. It's small money at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, no, the move is fine. And you know, because Folty got hit by that line drive and all of a sudden he was gone. I mean, I think that he took Folty's spot in the rotation. But, Kurt, I mean, and I agree with you. And Copy, in the Ask Copy session, said we have more payroll flexibility than we've had in the last 10 years, is what he said in that Twitter chat. So you're right. I mean, let's spend some money wisely and not play the let's pick up this guy and hope we can flip him game. It is we should be past that.
Yeah, and it's, of course, unfortunate that we are ready to spend money on, like, the worst free agent class in the history of
– I know.
The modern free agent class. It's like when the Hawks had four first-round draft picks and there were no good players coming out in the draft that year. So
yeah, and especially if they're not going to sacrifice draft picks. I mean, that makes it even harder for them, you know?
Right.
So next headline, continuing, of course, our long-running feud with one Jose Fernandez. Jose Ramirez threw behind his head on Wednesday night after Fernandez drilled Markakis because Markakis hit a home run off of him. So, Ham, any thoughts on this? Are you okay with the action, or do you think this is taste for the Braves to do this?
I do. Was it not because Tehran hit Prado? Was that not what it was?
Fernandez. Yeah, because Markakis hit a home run, and then the next time he was up, Fernandez threw at him.
Oh, okay. Anyway, right. No, there's not. I mean, if you're going to do that, you throw for the back or the hip or something like that. You just don't go for the head, especially for Ramirez. He has 16 walks and 27 innings. It's not like he's pinpoint accuracy. And, you know, we saw what happened to Hayward. We've seen it's horrible. So that's just immature. As cocky as Jose Fernandez is, I mean, he totally rubs me the wrong way. You just don't throw it heads. So I think the suspension is warranted and right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Braves rarely engage in this kind of stuff, showing fire, all the, you know, the corporate baseball culture and all of that stuff. So I like when it gets scrappy, and I hope that Ramirez, just because he doesn't have good accuracy, Ham, as you said, at times, that it just got away from him. I hope he wasn't trying to be like, yeah, I'm not going to throw, you know, at his leg. I'm going to
come up and
I'm going to teach him a lesson. Yeah. And throw up and in. But no, I mean, it's just awful. You know, I mean, just don't get anywhere near the head.
Yeah, I do like that they, you know, stuck up with their teammates, but obviously we don't want anybody getting hurt in some situation like this. So our last headline, the headline of the weird for the week, the latest installment in weirdest injury this year, as Dansby took an errant throw from Tyler Flowers, as we talked about this earlier, right in the old Swanson. So we group this with Ibar's chicken bone and Tehran's ingrown hair, Ham, which I know you love so much. Yeah. So Steve, which one of these currently sits as your favorite weird injury of the season for the Braves?
Yeah, you know, so I guess it's possible that you're going to choke on a chicken bone. We've all sort of choked on food in the past, and so that kind of happened. And the ingrown hair, I guess that kind of thing happens too, even though, you know, there's a doctor on staff and you think these guys are getting taken care of a little better. I think I said that when it first happened. But I feel like as a professional ball player, you should be able to stand in the infield and not worry that your catcher is going to overthrow your pitcher so poorly that you get hit. So I think that the Dansby one takes the cake. I really do. It's just insane.
So, Stevie, you're wrong. So, the nutshot for Dansby is purely unlucky. But, you know, and the ingrown hair for Tehran is the grossest injury. To the point where he got an infection that moved to the rest of his body. I mean, horribly disgusting. But Ibar ate chicken and then came to the clubhouse and then was like, wait, I don't feel so good all of a sudden. And then there was still a chicken bone in his throat. It's like the Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial. I ate the bones. How does that happen? That is the freakiest injury. Poor Dansby, unlucky, but the weirdest one is Ibar. It will always be the weirdest one. How do you get a bone in your throat and not know it for a couple hours?
Well, I guess my question for the whole Dansby Swanson thing is, I'm shocked, one, that these guys don't wear cups.
It is very strange.
And two, it was one of the funnier things I've seen was when I think it was the first game that he was back and Adonis Garcia was running break and would not allow Dansby anywhere near the behind the pitcher's mound when they were throwing down, which I thought was pretty hilarious. But I don't know that I have a winner because I feel like these are all sort of really scary loser things. So,
wow. All right, so you have you have a bunch of judgment about
it. Yeah, okay, cool.
I do. That's why I'm here.
That's great.
Judgy. So I forget who mentioned it, but looking quickly in on the minor league playoffs that were going on this week. So we had three teams playing for their championships, Gwinnett, Mississippi, and Rome. Unfortunately, we went 1-for-3 with Rome, the only team to prevail, which, of course, was great. I mean, it's great that they were all playing for championships. It's totally unfortunate that they didn't all win. Gwinnett honestly might have the worst loss I can remember. They had a chance to go up 2-0 coming home for the third game, and they were nursing a 1-0 lead going to the ninth. Chris Ellis had actually pitched brilliantly and had only given up one hit. And then two relievers decided that they would come in and take a dump all over the place. They walked two guys, they hit a batter, and then they walked two more guys to blow the game 2-1. Mm. So Gwinnett did not recover. They lost a series 3-1. Mississippi was swept 3-0. And Rome won 3-1 themselves. So not as great as it could have been, but a fine showing nonetheless. So, and of course, Steve, you talked about all that pitching in Rome. So, Ham, any other observations from the fine run? And we should mention the Gulf Coast League team also made the playoffs. They just didn't make it to the championship game. So, yeah. Ham, any thoughts on
heady times on the farm? Just a shout out and so excited for Max Fried. Or Fried.
Oh, my goodness.
I saw, Fried. Yeah, Fried. He won both clinching games in the postseason for Rome, 14 2/3 pitch. He struck out 24 in 14 2/3, and he allowed only 2 earned runs. Insane. Get here fast, Max.
Yeah, and so throughout Rome's playoffs, Soroka, Allard, Fried, and Toussaint went 49 1/3. 0.73 ERA, 50 strikeouts. I didn't realize half of them were Fried's, and 8 walks. I mean, that is just sick. It's sick, good stuff. So, you know, help is coming.
Yeah. I mean, Fried had 4 or 5 games in a row with over 10 strikeouts. He struck out 13 in the clinching game in the postseason. Just, he's got great stuff. He's peaking, and it's just exciting to see these guys win when it matters, you know? And it's just fantastic.
Did Fried come in the Justin trade? It was either, I know he came from San Diego. It was either the Justin trade or the Kimbrel
trade.
Yeah, I was
thinking it was the Kimbrel trade, but I could be wrong. Mm. Either way.
There were so many.
Yeah. And all the jokes about all the, you know, the arms we had coming back, which I'm sure I threw a million of them out there myself from Tommy John and whatnot, you know.
Good to
take some of these chances sometimes, because sometimes the reward does meet the payoff. So last headline, real quick one. I'm dropping this on you guys, but the Braves moved AJ and Rob Whalen to the 60-day DL and brought up Tyrell Jenkins, Steve's favorite, Emilio Bonifacio, and most excitingly, Rio Ruiz. So we finally get to see Rio Ruiz at the major league level, which is great. So, Steve, are you excited to see Ruiz up for these last couple of weeks?
Sure. I mean, Ruiz and Malik, now that the playoffs are over, he's here too. I don't know that they'll get any starts. I think it's going to be more pinch running and pinch hitting every once in a while. I mean, you know, I've seen people on Twitter bitching about, oh, they should get starts over the guys and all that stuff. You know, it's 2 weeks. Just let them have a little major league experience. If we're trying to trade Markakis or Garcia or any of these guys in the offseason, better to keep playing them and let them, you know, punch up their numbers some the last couple of weeks of the season. So, yes, cool to see them. As much as we'll see them, I think will be great. But otherwise, you know, on to next year with these guys.
Yeah, I'm excited to see
anything.
No, just because I feel like Ruiz has always been a fringe on the list. Like, people keep sort of jumping over him to be the most exciting guy, and we so need a long-term solution at third base. I mean, I love Adonis, But he just doesn't seem like he's never really materialized for me in a way that I've wanted. So it'd be great for him to have some opportunities here at the end of the season to maybe do that. But I agree. Don't maybe give, you know, Adonis and those guys a day off a week or something like that. But don't sacrifice their playing time for these guys yet. I'm with Steve.
And Steve, how excited are you that Emilio Bonifacio is back in Atlanta?
Oh, it's a gift. Wait, you know, I mean,
could Constanza be one of the former Braves we re-sign?
Maybe that's who Coffey was talking about. You're right. He did say big, big name.
He did say, and that's a big name.
Huge name.
Lots of letters.
All right, guys. So up next, we'll check in on our shots in the dark and the week ahead. But first, let's take a quick break. So, guys, let's check in on our favorite segment, our wild predictions for the week, the shot in the dark. First up, our listener pick from Alfred Allen, who predicted that Teherán and Fernandez would both pitch 8 innings with 10 Ks each and that the Braves would win the game 1-0. Well, this, of course, was the game where the grown men could come out and stood at each other and yelled at each other and really didn't get in a fight. Other than that, it was not very close. Teherán went 5 1/3 and gave up 5 earned with 5 Ks. Fernandez went 7, giving up 4 earned and 3 Ks. So, Alfred, thank you so much for playing, but sorry, that was not really all that close. And speaking of, on to our picks. So, Ham, you predicted that Adonis would hit 2 home runs, 2 doubles, and 2 RBI.
Nope.
He had 0 homers, 0 doubles. He did have 3 RBI, all of which came today.
Yes.
Steve, you went with the 3-3 special, predicted that your new boyfriend, Matt Kemp, would have 3 homers and 3 doubles. He had 1 homer and 3 doubles, so nice. Not too bad, but not close enough. I predicted that Dansby would miss a game after taking one in the phalanges. And
ding,
I was
ding,
spot
ding,
on
ding,
with
ding,
that
ding.
Call. Yeah, yes, or
right
that
in
he
the
would
basket.
Get hit. Yes, or that he would hit over 320 and have 6 extra base hits. He went 4 for 18 and had only 1 double on the week. So I think that leaves us all winless for the month, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right.
Yeah, we're still a big over.
So looking forward, Ham. What's your prediction for the week?
I think Freddie goes nuts in New York, hits 2 homers in that series against the Mets.
That's it? 2 homers?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Steve, anything braver than
2 homers in a 3-game series? I'm sorry. Come on. He's not Barry Bonds, thank God. But.
So quick thing. I don't know if you guys saw, you know, Freddie, we probably all know, his wife gave birth to their first child. And, you know, he left in the middle of the game, middle of the week. And later that night, Chipper tweeted out, "Yes, I took Freddie to the hospital on the 4-wheeler bobblehead to come later this year," which I thought was really awesome.
That's awesome. So, Curtis, all right. Excuse me, Steve. I'm sorry.
Ooh, pressure.
And he hits over 300 against the Mets. 2 homers over 300.
Perfect. Steve,
I'm gonna double down on your Dansby prediction, Curtis. I'm gonna have Dansby bat over 400 this week with at least 3 extra base hits.
How many in the jewels? Over, under, right, on a half.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
This could be the greatest shot in the dark of all time. And by that, I mean just the shoddiest shot in the dark of all time. Because I'm going with Aaron Blair.
Whoa.
Yeah, Aaron Blair has 2 starts this week. He pitched pretty well for the Gwinnett Braves in the playoffs. So I am saying that he gives up fewer than 7 runs over his 2 starts and pitches a combined 13 inning pitched. Over the 2.
Wow, that's really throwing one out there, Kurt.
So he can give up 4 in 1 run?
I know.
Have you seen Aaron Blair pitch on the major league level recently?
I mean, there is that.
He's given up like 8 1/3 of an inning. So he's got 2 starts. This is a shot in the dark.
Under 7 over his 2 starts. Or 7 or under.
7 or under over the 2 starts.
And 13 innings, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Very shoddy. Very, very in the dark. Okay, yeah, good.
when he pitches 5 innings over the 2 starts and gives up 16 runs.
You're right. You guys
will not be mocking me quite as much.
We'll
so with that, speaking of mocking, everyone out there, remember to get your shots in the dark in for the coming week on Facebook or Twitter. And if we pick it, of course, we will discuss it on next week's show. in a much nicer way than we have each other's. So first game, of course, is tomorrow starting at 7:10. So speaking of that, onto the schedule for the week. Seven games on the road. The season's almost over, so send them out on a seven-game road trip. Three at the Mets, four in Miami. So first up, Aaron Blair, as I just mentioned, gets Noah Syndergaard, who is 13-8 with a 2.43 ERA. Tuesday is Tehran against something called a Robert Gesselman, who is 2-1 with a 3.08 ERA. Wednesday is Gant against the ageless wonder Bartolo Colon, who is 14-7 with a 3.14 ERA. And guys, would you sign Bartolo Colon? He is a free agent at the end of the year.
No.
Steve?
I would have him as our fifth starter.
I mean, would you not take a fifth starter that went 14-7?
Seriously.
No, I would. 3.14 ERA. Even
the
if he at looks...
bats alone would be worth it.
Yeah.
True. So on to Miami, we get De La Cruz against Jose Urena, who I believe is getting his first career start. It did not list any starts for him. He has a 5.59 ERA, at least his first start of this season. Friday is Whistler against Andrew Cashner and his beard. Cashner sits at 5.11 with a 5.27 ERA. Quite a pickup for the fish there.
Yeah, good move.
Saturday sees Blair's second start against Wei Yi Chin, who is 5-4 with a 4.99 ERA. You wonder why the fish are collapsing out of the playoffs here. It's not that hard to see. And finally, next Sunday, we get a Tehran Jose Fernandez rematch.
Ooh.
Fernandez is 15-8 with a 2.99 ERA. It seems like we've actually hit pretty well against him in the last few starts that he has made against us. So, guys, predictions. Steve, we'll start with you.
I think we'll go 3-4. 1-2, 2-4, or whatever.
Two and two.
Yeah.
Got it. 6-9.
Exactly.
Two and five for me. 1-2 and 1-3.
Yeah, I'm going 3-4, just like Steve. Same prediction for both series, 1-2 and 2-4. So that is the show, folks. Please remember to find us at Blog Talk Radio as well as on iTunes and Stitcher. You can always find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our shows, check out our blogs, and to post in our comments section. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us, of course, on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit the